You're listening to the Space Show with Andrew Rennie. In the early days of space exploration, missions to the planets were fired off at every opportunity. They were limited by available technology and launch windows. By launch windows, we mean when the available rockets could get a rocket, get a payload on the way towards a particular planet, when the planets line up in the right place. But then the cost and complexity rose, and missions became infrequent. Scientists and administrators alike in the United States realized that a systematic procedure was needed to plan future missions. 10 years ago, the Americans drew up a plan for the decade ahead. That worked so well that they have now drawn up a second decadal plan for planetary exploration. On this evening's The Space Show, we will examine this plan. Our guide will be Cornell University's Steve Squires. Now, he rose to prominence in the early 2000s as the principal investigator of the two Mars exploration rovers.
Now, what is a decadal survey? Every 10 years, at the request of NASA and the National Science Foundation, the NRC carries out a decadal survey for planetary science. This is the second planetary decadal survey. It's modeled after stuff that the astronomy community has been doing for something like 50 years. It involves very broad participation from the planetary science community, and it is the primary scientific input that Jim Green at NASA and that NSF use to design their program of planetary exploration. This is an extraordinary thing. It's an instance where a federal agency looks to its constituents, to our community, for actionable advice on what they ought to do, and then they actually listen, and they go off and do it. And it represents an amazing opportunity for us as a community, and one that we try to take full advantage of. And the decadal survey that we participated in applies to the decade from 2013 to 2022.
Scientist Steve Squires, speaking last year at a scientific conference. In outlining the new plan, Steve made reference to Jim Green. He is the director of the Planetary Science Division of NASA's Science Mission Directorate. He works at NASA headquarters in Washington, D.C. Nothing goes from the United States to the planets without his approval.
Now, we had three guiding principles. The first is that science comes first. This is spelled out in our statement of task. It's axiomatic. What we do must be first and foremost guided by the science. The second is community involvement. This is our decadal survey as a community. And we did everything that we could to involve the community from the very start, when we went out and got the white papers, to the very end when we had 18 peer reviewers, and I'm sure a bunch of you are in this room. Thank you for what you did for the report. And finally, there's transparency and openness. We tried to make this process as inclusive as we possibly could, to make it as visible as we possibly could to anybody who was interested.
Having outlined these three guiding principles, Squires stated the task. By the way, the NSF is the United States' National Science Foundation.
Our activities were governed by a statement of task. The statement of task, you can see it on the NRC website. It was provided to us by NASA and NSF, with also input from the White House's Office of Management and Budget. It was the guiding document for all that we did. And it particularly emphasized two things. One was that our recommendations should be science-driven. And the second, and this is the way in which this decadal differed from those that have come before, was that it stressed that we should recommend a program that would be implementable within projected budgetary resources. And what that did was it made it necessary for us to put attention on not just the science, but also on the costs of the science. This is the organization. We had five panels, one for the inner planets, one for the outer planets, one for primitive bodies, one for Mars, and one for outer planet satellites.
Many research interest groups contributed to the decadal plan. So many, indeed, that Steve was able to crack a joke about it.
You, the community, submitted 199 white papers. I was tempted to write one myself, Joe, just so we'd have an even 200. 199 white papers with 1,669 individual authors and endorsers. So it was an outpouring of information and contribution from our community.
Most of those scientists present at the conference would want to read at least that part of the plan that affected their interest. Would, for example, their pet proposal be accepted? Squires had some advice on how to read the report.
The white papers were the primary input that we used to assess our community's views on what the science should be. But when you first sit down to read the report, the chapter you should look at first is Chapter 3. Chapter 3 is a breathtaking summary. And I can say that because I didn't really contribute much to writing it. Larry Soderblom led the writing of that chapter. But it's a breathtaking summary of the state of knowledge in planetary science and what are the current big questions. We identified three overarching themes. We've given them the names Building New Worlds. This means basically understanding the origins of planetary systems, planetary habitats, looking for the requirements for life in our solar system, and workings of solar systems, how planetary processes work. And Chapter 3 expands on those in great detail, identifying a number of key questions for each. But what they do is they seek to take those three overarching themes and write them down into a series of questions that can then be addressed by the program of science and exploration. I don't mean just the missions. I mean RNA. I mean what NSF does. All of that. These can be used to guide our program of planetary exploration. Building new worlds, planetary habitats, looking for the kind of places where life could take hold and in fact may have taken hold, and then workings of solar systems, using the planets as a solar system scale laboratory to understand the processes that have shaped them and that have shaped our own planet.
The proposals put up for consideration had to be evaluated. In beginning to explain this process, Steve Squires made mention of some organizations, and we should explain what they are. APL, well, that's the Applied Physics Laboratory of the Johns Hopkins University. Goddard, that's NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Maryland. JPL. Well, that's the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California, which is run for NASA under contract by the California Institute of Technology, Caltech. NRC. That's the National Research Council. And FY. Well, that means fiscal year.
Okay, the mission studies. Based on the science that was identified from the white papers and other community inputs, we identified a total of 25 mission candidates. This part of the job was really fun. Okay, this is one of my favorite parts of the whole flight project game has always been the part I call the blank sheet of paper. You know, when you have a set of science objectives and you sit down with a blank sheet of paper in front of you and say, okay, what kind of mission could do this? We did that 25 times over. The studies were performed by APL, by Goddard, and by JPL. Now, once you have a mission study done, you have enough information to give you a sense of what the mission looks like, but we still need a cost number.
We're all familiar with projects that initially are said to cost a certain amount, but end up costing squillions more. In the space business, that is no longer acceptable.
The mission study process that took place internal to Goddard, internal to APL, JPL, those all generated cost numbers. We disregarded those cost numbers. Those cost numbers, as much effort as went into them, they were generated by people who were believers in these missions. They were generated by people who were the advocates of these missions. And in order to be responsible, to be responsive to our statement of task, we felt it was very important to use cost numbers that had been generated independently by unbiased outside experts. And so the NRC contracted with Aerospace Corporation to conduct a process that we call cost and technical evaluations, CATE, CATES. And these were done for a selected subset of the highest priority missions as identified by the panels. Now, here's a key point. The techniques that are used to generate these CATE cost estimates, they're based on multiple methodologies, but one of the most important is using the actual as-built and flown costs of analogous missions. This is not a grassroots, bottoms-up, here's what we think it's going to cost based on some work breakdown structure. This is instead a process that takes into account, as best we could, the optimism that is inherent in these advocacy cost numbers that are sometimes used. Now, that's the good news. The good news is these numbers are probably realistic. The bad news is you're going to see some sticker shock. Okay, here's an example. This is shown in the picture on the right here. You can see the original estimate from the project, if you will, of the cost of this particular mission at $2.2 billion. The cost estimate that arose out of the K process was $3.5 billion. It's a factor of pi over 2 if you do the math. And by the way, all the costs that I will quote you are in FY15 dollars.
Once a mission is costed, it can then be ranked against other proposals. Of course, there are other factors to be considered. Squires outlined the criteria for prioritization of possible planetary missions.
The criteria that the panels used for prioritizing and making recommendations, two primary ones. The first and most important was science return per dollar. This was science return as judged by the experts on our panels based on the inputs that they get from the community. It is dollars as determined by the CATE process and Aerospace Corporation. Now, I recognize that science return is not an easily quantifiable thing. It's hard to attach a number to. So we are using the best judgment of the best experts that we could get to give us their considered opinion on science return per dollar when they did the rankings. Second criterion was programmatic balance. And programmatic balance takes two forms. One is balance across the solar system, balance across a range of solar system targets. The other is balance in terms of mission size, mix of small, medium, and large missions. And those two are obviously linked because some parts of the solar system, the outer solar system, for example, are hard to get to with small missions. And then there were also two gates, if you will, that any candidate mission had to get through to be recommended. One was readiness of the appropriate technologies. The other was availability of trajectories. You got to be able to get from here to there in the decade in question. All the priorities and recommendations you're about to hear were arrived at by achieving very strong consensus. So everything that you're going to hear was arrived at by strong consensus, and most of it, I'm pleased to say, was by unanimous consensus.
Having now ranked your wish list for planetary exploration, the next task is to get the money from Congress. Steve explained the process by which the American space budget is set.
Okay, our budget wedge. At the beginning of this process, we needed something to shoot at. We needed some estimate of what the budget might be. Now, we recognize from the start that this is a projection handed to us in the year 2010 of what might happen as far out as 2022. There is no reason to expect the reality is going to be this exactly. So we recognized from the start that this was something to shoot at, but that our report must include clearly delineated tripwires and decision rules that will enable the agency to respond to our recommendations in the event that the reality, as it surely must be, is going to turn out to be different from this. In fiscal 13, 14, 15, 16, the funding for planetary science declines precipitously in this particular budget projection.
On this evening's The Space Show, planetary scientist Steve Squires has been explaining how America's decadal survey for the coming decade was prepared. Well, this has been the first of three programs about the Planetary Exploration Plan. Next week, the next chapter will describe the projects on the scientists' wish list.
Your voice in the community, the Great Southern Sounds of Melbourne, 88.3 Southern FM.